The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. We have a wonderful program for you today, a very interesting one, and one that is very near and dear to my heart, and I'll tell you all about that in just a second. But make sure that if you get outside, because it's a gorgeous day, bring your headset, continue listening to the program. I have the opportunity of having someone who I've known probably just about the entirety of my career, shy of a couple years here or there, somebody who I call my photon brother, someone who has a bandwidth of intelligence and capacity far greater than most people. He was the chiropractor, applied kinesiologist for the Kansas City Chiefs for over 12 years, and an amazing practice down in Kansas City. Practices with his son, but he's an expert in a lot of different things. I'm going to hold it at that point. And this man knows concussive patterns. And as you know, we've been talking about concussions off and on over the last probably month or so. And we're going to bring somebody in who is a master at this. Who am I talking about? None other than Dr. Evan Mladenov. Evan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? I'm just trying to plug in my internet here because I'm getting a lot of static. So I'm going to go hardwire instead of Wi-Fi.
So in other words, I've got to talk for you in case that you don't come back up out of that chair, right?
There you go.
There you go. Perfect.
Okay, that should be better now.
Anyway, welcome back, my friend. You know, any time that I get around you, every time I think I know something, I'm humbled with that bandwidth that you have, but your experience base and having worked with so many different athletes, professional athletes and Olympians, and as our practices parallel each other, people who try to become much more than what they do, but they end up with blows and traumas and they get their brains jiggled a little bit. And sometimes we're not aware of it until years and years later to the symptom processes that begin to show up. And then, you know, we don't know what we don't know. But let me ask you this, just to start with, to set our audience in the mood for this. We talk about concussion. But what really is a concussion and how does it affect the nervous system? And then ultimately, I want to walk you down the course of, you know, how it portrays itself when we don't even know it's there.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first thing I'd like to say, Tom, is thanks for having me on the show. And there's been a lot about concussions in the media lately because of the Miami Dolphins quarterback incidents, three of them. And here's the important thing I want your listeners to be weary of, and that is there's a lot of talking heads on TV that have never examined a concussed patient, that have never seen a concussed patient, that have never helped a concussed patient recovery, knows nothing about their lifestyle and how concussions can dramatically change their life forever. So be wary of who you listen to, and I'm including doctors in that too. So with that as a framework, quite simply, a concussion is something that happens to your brain. So now if I took a hammer and banged your thumb, Dr. Tom, what would happen? And it gets swollen and throb, and then you curse and throw stuff. So when your brain, you picture this, you have your brain, which is like jelly. So it's highly movable. It's got a little bit of liquid. Then it's got a dense layer like a trampoline that suspends it away from the bones. And then you've got a few little anchors that hold the trampoline to the bones of your head. And then you got another layer of liquid. So that your brain is pretty mobile inside of your head. So I'm going to show you on the video, what happens is that your head does not have to hit anything for you to get a concussion. So if your head gets thrown forward, then backwards, your brain sloshes forward and backwards. So your brain sloshes forward and it's heavier than the liquid. So the liquid gets there first, then your brain, then the liquid starts going the opposite way because it hit the front of the bones. Then your brain hits the bones with no liquid to cushion it. Okay. Then the liquid's going backwards. Now your brain is going backwards. Now the bones are going backwards. Now the reverse happens. So the brain hits the opposite side. So now you have two parts of your brain that, like your thumb just got hit on a hammer, two parts of your brain are going to have swelling. Now, the difference is when you hit your hammer, it swells and it throbs. It can expand. But when your brain gets hit like that, okay, from the inside, the brain swells and it's got no place to go.
No expansion.
The bones, right? So wherever it presses on, that's where the symptoms and the malfunction and the disturbances are going to happen. So there are five things that happen in every concussion, and there's no two concussions the same. But the five things that are happening is they could have a neck injury. They could have neuroinflammation. They could have a metabolic cascade. They could have a hormonal problem, and then they can have a vestibular injury. So all five of those areas must be examined after it's determined that the person does not have a life-threatening event.
Evan, let me ask you a couple of questions relative to that, because our listeners are sitting there, you know, totally engaged as I am, but you and I understand the vernacular. But, you know, when you talk about there's hormonal issues, there's no injuries, and you went on without getting in tremendous detail, how do they know that these things come from the brain? Why from the brain? Why would you have to examine hormone? Why would you have to examine all those other pieces? That's not in the realm of, you know, a neural problem. That's endocrine problem.
That's a great question. So the way your brain sits, just picture this. You have a volleyball that sits on a post. Okay. And then right where the brain sits on that post, that's called your vestibular system, right? Or the brain stem, more accurately. And so that's one part that can be injured when the brain gets sloshed back and forth. It can actually cause tearing of that part of the brain. And so now you're going to have balance problems. You're going to have eye problems. You're going to have visual disturbances. You may have hearing disturbances. Now, a little higher up, you have something called the Turkish saddle, which is fancy for where the pituitary gland, the master hormonal gland of the body, where it sits inside the bones of the head, and it can be stretched also. So now if that gland is stretched, it can cause tearing, it can cause bleeding. And now because that gland tells you how to make testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, cholesterol, thyroid hormone, all those other things, you could have hormonal problems, okay? And then, like we first talked about, the fact that the brain hits the bones on the inside, it's just like hitting your hammer. You're going to have inflammation. So neuroinflammation is just like inflammation of nerves, just like you would have, you know, inflammation from getting a sliver in your thumb. So when you look at the anatomy and the neurology, okay, the basic building blocks of what the brain is, it's quite easy to see how all those things happen. But again, yeah, I want your listeners to understand, if in doubt, you go to ER first. Make sure there's no fracture. There's no internal bleeding. It's not a life-threatening situation. And you know, Dr. Tom, I've never been in a position to evaluate a concussion firsthand like that. And here's the reason why. And that is I do not make life saving decisions every day in my clinic that would immediately impact the person's life in the next hour, right? Yes, we make life-altering decisions that will change their life that might take us 6 days to 6 weeks to 6 months to change their body function, their brain function. But in terms of it being a life-threatening situation, that's not how I work. So that's got to be a very special person to be the first person there. So just think back of the third hit when Tua is sitting there and he's in and hears those talking experts. They called it what did they call it? But it was the wrong thing. They call it fencing, right? Well, it's really called posturing. That's the neurological word for it. And there's two kinds of posturing. But when you saw him there and his fingers were in weird spasms, that was not a normal pattern. Normally, there's two major patterns that tell you which part of the brain can be affected. And when someone goes into that posturing, into that spasm like that, it's not good. They're usually in a comatose state. And the guy was laying there for 12 minutes. He was laying there in that posture. That's not good. And it's been deafeningly quiet how he's doing. And I just pray the young man is fine. But his life has changed forever now, because of something called second impact syndrome. So when your brain gets swollen because of an injury, if you injure it again while it's swollen, it can have dramatically bad effects.
Dr. Ebb, let me ask you a real quick question. So when something like that happens, and let's say not to the extent that it happened with this young athlete, but to other people, car accidents, traumas, blows, they hit their head on the headrests in the car, or, you know, they bump their head against the trunk, but with pretty significant impact. Now, obviously those in the moment aren't life threatening, but over a period of time, you still have the swelling, you still have the bleeding, you still have all those things. Now you see them months later, week later, sometimes years later.
Yes.
What is the presentation at that point? Has there already been damage? Is there a neurological presentation that is subtle, slow, and debilitating that occurs over time?
That is a really great question. So everybody's heard of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So if you now you're going to see people coming on TV, former players, you know, talking heads are going to say, oh, so-and-so is diagnosed with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. They're full of beans. That diagnosis is a post-mortem diagnosis. The patient is dead already. It's too late, right? So if you hear anybody talking like that and the person is still alive, they have no clue what they're talking about, right? So yes, back to your question. If they have the inflammation in your brain never goes away until you do something about it, because we're talking about a closed space that only has one way in and one way out. So anything that's stuck in there stays in there. And that can be, that's why an infection in the brain is so life threatening, because once it gets there, it's hard to get it out. And so it can have obviously bad effects. So. When you have the injury, you can't just blow it off and say, okay, I'm going to be tough. I'm going to go back in the game, or, you know, I got to go to work. I got to be tough. Or I'll just take these drugs and mask the symptoms. As long as I have no symptoms, I'll be okay. Well, then you're now entering the fast track of memory loss. And, you know, then we can debate, okay, is that going down the track of dementia or Alzheimer's? And I don't like using those words. Because as soon as you say those words, people start freaking out and they have this vision, because we all know somebody has gone down that path. But there are a few simple things. For example, if you're a diabetic and you hit your head, you're 10 times more likely to have long-term memory problems, because they now call, you know, the dementia Alzheimer's spectrum type 3 diabetes, because when the blood sugar is out of control, it messes up your brain. So one of the things that when you deal with head trauma, no matter how soon or long it's been from the head trauma, you need to get the nutrients of the brain working properly. And so the three things the brain needs is it needs oxygen, it needs fats, and it needs some sugar. Now, the problem is most Americans, and in their diet and their lifestyle, they have too much sugar, the wrong kind of fats, and they don't do enough exercise, so they don't have oxygen delivered to the brain.
Evan, so, hold that thought. We're coming up to a break, and we right. have to pay attention to our sponsors. You're listening to Dr. Tom Roesel Live. I have the pleasure, the privilege of having an amazing expert on concussion, a very dear friend of mine, someone who I've been professionally associated and love as a brother for many, many years, Dr. Evan Mladenov. You can get a hold of us at 888-630-9625 if you have any questions that you'd like to ask. We'll be right back after some very important messages. Don't go away. Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Roesel. You're listening to Dr. Tom Roesel Live. Very special program, very special guest today, Dr. Evan Mladenov. We're talking about concussions. Dr. Mladenov was the chiropractor, applied kinesiologist for the Kansas City Chiefs for over 12 years, practices in Kansas City. It's an amazing intellect, someone who I dearly and lovingly call a friend and a brother. I'm always in awe and amazement of his intellectual capacity and what he does. But we're talking about concussion patterns, and something that he is an expert at and talks about and lectures about on a regular basis. Welcome back, Dr. M. This is an area of interest for so many people, but it's so misunderstood. And we were just getting into it. And by the way, if you'd like to talk to Dr. Mladenov online today, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. We'd love to take your phone calls. I could talk to this man for hours and hours and come up with all kinds of nuances that, even though I've known him for virtually my entire career, he continues to amaze. Dr. Am, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, this enigma, what happens in the post-concussive pattern over a period of time and the presentations that people have relative to injury. We have young athletes that I have a grandson who's an amazing lineman for Briarwoods High School in the Northern Virginia area. And, you know, he's getting smacked around, even though he's about 235 pounds. But there's other kids that get dinged and blowed and so forth. And I started way too young. And then we progressed through college. But all of us are amateur athletes as well. And we're hitting our heads and we're doing things. What's the presentation over time? Not that just the media say that, oh my God, we're going to save this person from really dying. But what are those symptom processes? And then when we get in the second half of the program, you know, we want to differentiate of when something's really healed and when it's not.
That's a really great question. Some of the major presentations are, and it's easy for people to blow these off. One of the biggest long-term determinants of how someone is going to recover from a concussion is their sleep pattern. So if their sleep becomes disrupted, well, that's just about everybody in America has got some kind of sleep issue. We all as a society do not sleep enough. So if the sleep is disrupted, then that is going to prolong the concussion. The next common group of symptoms are balance related. You know, they get up from sitting and all of a sudden they got to hold on a little bit because they feel like they're just wavering or like they're drunk a little bit for about 30 seconds. Then they kind of eventually, so it's easier for them to blow that off, right? To say, oh yeah, I'm fine now. Then there's another group of physical symptoms like neck pain, headaches, blurry vision. They may have trouble focusing. They may have eye strain. And then there's a group of vague symptoms where they have brain fog, trouble concentrating. They may have trouble getting up in the morning, do better late at night. But here's the thing to remember, Dr. Tom, and that is people do what they do. So whether it's like hang gliding, running 100-mile marathons every night, or whether it's having a shot of whiskey every night, or whether it's me riding my bicycle like I'm going to do when we finish the show here, people do what makes their brain feel better. They're inherently trying to fix their brain. But the problem now is that, you know, they will start to do addictive behavior because it makes their brain feel better. It doesn't fix anything. It just makes them feel better temporarily. And so you'll see patients starting to do that. So,
Dr. Allen, let me ask you a question. Can you and this is what's going through my mind because this is how I think in the practice. Can you have those symptoms of concussive injury without having had a physical blow notably?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And remember, we talked about your brain sloshing around in your head. So one of the greatest examples is I'm a hockey fan growing up in Canada. If your listeners do a YouTube search on Scott Stevens, Eric Lindros hit. Eric Lindros is a big man. He's like 6'4", 260 pounds. And Scott Stevens is about 5'11", and it looks like a pit bull. So Lindros is coming across the blue line. They hit shoulder to shoulder. So the defenseman hits the attacker shoulder to shoulder. When you watch the replay, his head gets whipped. Lindros's head gets whipped forward and back like a whiplash in a car accident. Doesn't touch anything. He is unconscious before his body touches the ice. And his head didn't hit anything. But the violent whipping of the head made his brain slosh around so much inside the vault or the bones of the head that he literally passed out. And why? Because the brain got swollen and inflamed for where it hit the bones on the inside of the head. That stays there forever until you do something like in real serious cases, they might have to drill a hole through the skull to drain the brain because there's so much swelling on the brain.
Evan, we're coming up to a break. I want to continue this thought process. I got a couple of specific questions on that. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizal Live. My guest, Dr. Evan Mladenov, Kansas City, expert on concussion and someone who's very near and dear to my heart. We'll be right back after some very important messages. Don't go away.
Dr. Tom Rizal Live continues now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rizal. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizal Live. Wonderful. program that we have today is amazing. And it's amazing for me simply because I'm talking to an expert in my world that has dealt with brain injury and trauma. We call it concussion for decades. And not only that, he was the chiropractor, the applied kinesiologist for the Kansas City Chiefs for 12 years, someone who was very notable, quoted throughout our world, and a man who has a bandwidth of intellectual capacity and application, second to very few that I'm aware of and know. So it's always a pleasure. I call him brother, Dr. Evan Ladenoff. Welcome back, Dr. M. We're talking about impact injuries and how it affects people, slightly touched upon this, the subject that, you know, from kids to professional athletes, everybody is subject to this kind of thing. So you have an injury, you have a concussion, and it has the manifestations of that. And you talked about early on that it can be an endocrine problem. It could be a neurological problem. It could, you know, the bandwidth is huge. And there could be tearing, there's scarring, there's all kinds of things that takes place. And this patient limps along for a period of time. How do you know when somebody is clean, their brain's working the way it's supposed to, the injury's not there anymore, they can move on, they can get back into participation? You know, particularly, I have a grandson, and we touched upon him earlier on. You know, here's this boy who is, you know, he's a monster. He's 16 years old. He's 6'3", 235 pounds, and growing. And he takes smacks all the time. So if he had an injury, if his head was rattled, and he ended up with a diagnosis of concussive pattern, how do we know it's safe to bring him back and put him back on the field? How do we know that any athlete, it's time to say, okay, you can go back. You're in a good place now. You're not going to sustain further damage and further injury.
Okay, so your listeners, I'm sure, have heard, oh, concussion, you're back in 7 to 10 days. Well, I did some research on this. The NFL on their website says there's 5 stages for an athlete to go through to return to play. But all of the symposiums that have been done, all the national, international symposiums say there are 6 stages that an athlete must go through to return to play or participation. This does not account for returning to learn in the classroom or cognitive function, returning to drive, or returning to work if it's, you know, someone who is a non-athlete. Okay. So, and I've got these. I'd be happy to share these with your listeners. So, Dr. Tom, if I can, I'm going to ask them to text the word concussion to 833-459-3667, and we'll send them about 4 or 5 links to all of these stages. So stage one for returning to play is, okay, no symptoms. There must be no symptoms for at least 24 hours, no brainwave training, no physical activities that raise the heart rate above the resting rate, no raising the head. For example, wherever your head goes, your blood pressure goes. So if you're standing up and sitting down a lot, every time you stand up, your blood pressure is going to go up, and that's going to drive more blood to the brain, which is going to irritate the inflammation. So that stage one is rest. So when you pass that, okay, that's a minimum. Each one of these stages is a minimum 24 hours. Stage two is the reintroduction of exercise. So this is the ability to raise the heart rate with a little bit of cardio without symptoms coming back or getting worse during the exercise or after. So we want no head movement. So something that works really good is a stationary bicycle where they can just pedal and raise the heart rate. There's going to be no movement of the head. And so you want to just start out at 15 minutes. Now, here's where most people are going to be in the gray area. Most people can't tell you what their resting heart rate is. Most people can't tell you what their target heart range is in exercise. So this could be a little bit of a guessing game. So I'm just picking a number. So they should go 15 minutes at about 120 beats per minute. If they go 15 minutes with no problems, then they should increase to 30 minutes at 120 beats per minute. If they can tolerate that, then 30 minutes at 140 beats per minute, then 30 beats at 140 beats per minute with 1 minute maximum activity every 5 minutes. So that's only stage two. Okay. They do that fine. Then they go to stage three, which is low level activity that is sports specific. So for example, your grandson, the defensive lineman, he could do like they do in warm up. He could go down a 3-point stance and do some starts, do some sachets and crossovers right to left side, do the drills around the cones. No contact though. You don't want him hitting the dummies yet. Okay. He can do that without any increase in symptoms. He goes to stage four, which is intermediate activity. So this is, you're going to increase the intensity. There's going to be some body resistance, and you're going to continue with the intensity of sports specific drills. And we're going to add 15 minutes a day of body weight floor exercises like planks, push-ups, squats, lunges. And again, I got a list of all this stuff that your listeners would be happy to send them to. Then stage five is submaximum. Remember, it's at least 24 hours for each one of these. So now we're stage five. That means you're day five. You know, did that happen to the Dolphins quarterback? And the answer is heck no. So stage five is submaximum exercise. So no symptoms. They can do all aspects of normal training or play except collision. So then you want them going full tilt, but no collision yet. And once they can do that, no symptoms, then you can try some collision activities like when the linemen go up against the blocking dummies and those kind of things, right? So they can do that. When they can do that with no symptom return, they can return to play. So now here's the question. What do you think the average return to play for a female college athlete is? Remember, everybody thinks it's 7 to 10 days. All the statistics, all the research. Female athletes, how long do you think it takes them to get better? Average.
Probably at least 6 to 8 weeks.
29.4 days. The average male, so we're talking like 18 to 22-year-olds, right? And it's not, this has been broken down by sports, so I'm just giving you averages. The average male is 22.4 days. So we're just like 7 to 10 days. Who came up with this idea? And the answer is, only when they meet those criteria, if they go through each step, well, how can you introduce increasing your heart rate 120 beats per minute for one day, and then you go to 130, then 140? You don't do that in one day. You're going to take 4 or 5 days, maybe a week, to just raise your heart rate. And that's only in phase number two of the return to play protocols. So these are very stringent guidelines. And so when you go, maybe not to the hospital, but when you do a follow-up for concussion management, no matter what clinic you go to, there's some red flags that your listeners need to be aware of. When you go and you get examined, they should give you, okay, here is the stage your child or you should be in for returning to player participation. And they should give you the guidelines we just went through. And here, another sheet is, okay, here is the return to learner cognitive function you must go to. They should give you the 6 stages. By the way, there's only 8 states in the U.S. that have laws that mandate that the student be given specific return to learn protocols to go back to school, and the school must have a liaison to make only 8 states. So you should be given, okay, here's the amount of cognitive activity your child should be doing. Here's the return to drive criteria. And then, okay, if you're in the work field, you should be given return to work criteria. If you don't get, you know, 4 pages of stuff of here's the minimum amount or the maximum amount of activity you should be doing, you're in the wrong place. Walk out the door, because they do not understand the return to life, full life participation that you need to be integrated back into.
I want to remind our listeners that you're very kind to putting all this together for them, for themselves, for their children, for their grandchildren, and regardless of what's happened, if you know you may have sustained a concussion, simply text the word concussion, CONCUSSION, to the number 833-459-3667. Again, that's concussion, 833-459-3667, and Dr. M has been kind enough to send that, or put that together to send that to you. So make that happen. We'll mention it one more time as we go through the program. Dr. M, you know, you sustained a pretty significant injury a few years back. You had a bike accident, and one that took you a while to recover from, and you did smash yourself up pretty decently. What residuals? I mean, here's somebody, you know, you and I have been in practice. I've been in practice just a little bit longer than you, but not by much. And, you know, at our stage of the game, you know, do we suffer a residual? Do you notice anything? Because you were hit on your bike and you were thrown a couple lanes over and you smashed your body, you hit your head. Tell us about that and relate that to our listeners and things that have happened to them.
Well, I'd be happy to do that because I was a foolish patient. So I got hit traveling. I was pedaling my bicycle at 25 miles an hour. A guy ran a stop sign, hit me on the right side. My right elbow broke the rear view mirror off the car. That's how hard the impact was. I tried to swerve to miss him. I had road rash from my ankle to my shoulder on the right side of my body. My head bounced off the pavement 3 times. There were 11 fractures inside my helmet. So what people need to understand, whether it's a bicycle or a football injury, helmets do not prevent concussions. They are to prevent fractures of your skull. The brain still gets sloshed around inside. So within 15 minutes, my son, who practices with us, started examining me. Well, the problem was I went back to work in 2 days. And now here's the good news, because that certainly was absolutely foolish. My personal physician was there watching me. And as soon as I'd start stuttering or I'd get angry for no reason, because I couldn't remember an acupuncture point that I knew how to calculate, how to find it and where it was on the body a million times, he'd say, okay, Dr. M, you need to go lay down. You're done for the day. And then he would treat me. So if I had taken the time off, like I am suggesting everybody else, I would have got better a whole lot faster. So I was not a good patient. I'm fully accepting that sequela. So now fast forward. Have I fully recovered? And the answer is you have seen me lecture enough times that you would know that I'm not the same. But if somebody has never seen me lecture before, they'd say, oh, this guy's like pretty cool and he knows his stuff. So I think I'm 99.99% back. But as you know, I'm a perfectionist, far too much. So my recall of specific information, like I can't remember a citation for a research article. And then about 10 minutes later, it'll come to me. So little things like that. And then, you know, if we're busy in a clinic, I will second guess myself and say, okay, I have to do the sedation point of the gallbladder meridian. And I think it's, you know, gallbladder 43. And then I'll second guess myself and say, wait a minute, is it 43 or is it 44? And so then I'll go look it up. And again, 9 times out of 10, I was like, oh yeah, I was right. I should have just tested my instinct, but I would never have that self doubt in the past. So little things like that I see. Now, if you ask my wife, she might say, well, he still gets angry pretty easy for no reason at all. But that's another story. So I had that before. So, but that's one of the things that happens like right after an accident, because people are stuck in what's called immobilization. Their nervous system is locked at the moment of trauma. It's like they're standing on the edge of a cliff at the Grand Canyon and they're falling over, but they're not falling over. So a gust of wind or someone says, hey, Dr. Roselle, and you turn and look, that'll make you fall. Or if you sneeze, that can make you fall, right? So the trigger is irrelevant. Your body is hanging on a very thin edge and you can go from zero to full throttle. So for example, the things that some of your listeners, even if they've had a concussion a long time ago and they still got some residual symptoms, they keep blowing off. You ask the people around them, just say, hey, does Tom go from zero to angry at the blink of an eye? And that emotion is pretty prominent after especially head trauma.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in my world that would answer that, because you know what happened to me 2.5 years ago.
Exactly.
And I passed out and I smashed my head on the ground and I was out. So there's going to be 2 questions I'm going to follow up with. One is, when you have that trauma, it has a propensity to stop your heart or change your heart rhythm because of the ventral vagus. And that's brainstem. That's your vestibular area. And so there can be a slowing down or an absence of blood supply to the brain for a short period of time. Any absence, obviously, you and I know is a problematic situation. Now, over time, you know, with that situation occurring, what's the potential when you've had trauma of that sort that it's affecting the heart rate, that there's full resolution? Or do they show up later in the cardiologist's office not knowing where it came from and they're in AFib or they have a bradycardia or they have a tachycardia pattern? Are those things possible? You got about a minute.
Yes, yes, and yes. That happened to me a year after my concussion. Dr. Chip said, okay, you can go back to full bike riding, I wasn't doing any contact stuff. I could pedal my tushy off for an hour. And I'd be exhausted after. I could not get my heart rate over 120 beats per minute. It was stuck slow. And my resting heart rate was low. And I knew it wasn't low because I was physically fit. It was low because I was stuck in what's called bradycardia. The heart rate was slow because of the head trauma. Well, then I got with my cardiologist, and between him and Dr. Chip, we changed my exercise program to something called high intensity interval training. And as soon as we started doing that type of training, all of a sudden my heart rate starts. So now when I go on my bike and I do some decent hills, I've had my heart rate up to over 200 beats per minute, you know, when I exercise hard. So the answer to the question is, if you don't have some special technology that does heart rate variability testing, you won't find this stuff. And so that's when, you know, 20 years later, they end up in the cardiologist's office. Their blood pressure doesn't change when they stand up or lay down. They got a slow heartbeat. They don't get enough blood to their brain. They're starting to get memory loss stuff.
Dr. M, we're coming up to a break. We'll be right back. We're going to wrap this up in the last part of the segment. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, and a brilliant, brilliant doctor, Dr. Evan Bladnoff from Kansas City. Don't go away. We'll be right back after some important messages.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as you do every Sunday at high noon on the Eastern Seaboard. We're here for you, trying to bring you the best cutting-edge information that you can find anywhere. And we tried to do more than that today by bringing in somebody who is, in my opinion, probably one of the best in my world in the business, Dr. Evan Bladnoff out of Kansas City, who's a doc for the Kansas City Chiefs for 12 years, and somebody who I have tremendous admiration for. We're talking about concussions, and that's an area of expertise in his world. Dr. Evan, welcome back again. Let's wrap up a little bit. I want to let our listeners know that they can get the protocols for concussions, and will you give that to them one more time? They need to text concussion to what number?
The word concussion to 833-459-3667. So it'll ask you for your name, email. There'll be a delay, and then you'll probably get four or five text messages with the links directly to the download. Here's the return to play criteria. Here's the return to work, return to school, return to drive. We've got some other things on. Okay. Here's good things for the brain. Here's bad things for the brain. Here's 10 things you can do to make your brain better. So each one of those is going to be a separate topic, a separate page of information.
This is amazing stuff that you're not going to find anyplace else. So take advantage of it. Again, text concussion to 833-459-3667. And it's his gift to you. So take advantage of this. This is a man who's brilliant and has put together multiple steps on how to return to play, because he's an athlete. His son's an athlete. He's was the doc for the Kansas City Chiefs for many years. And I'm telling you, from having been with this man for years, brilliance doesn't come in any better package than what I'm talking about and who I'm talking to right now. Dr. M, let's kind of wrap this up a little bit. We got a couple minutes, and you know, what do we need to take away from this?
First, do not be afraid of ER. If in doubt, go to ER. You need to make sure nothing bad is going to happen. No fracture, no bleeding, no life-threatening situation. I'd rather have you go 100 times to ER and they say, what are you doing here? There's nothing wrong. You got some neck pain. You got some medics. Yeah, you might have a concussion, but there's no, right? So first, go to ER. If in doubt, go to ER. Then second is, okay, you need to get with a practitioner who has experience in concussions. And again, like we talked about, if after your first examination, no matter what they do, if they don't give you a list of don'ts, you know, you can only do this much exercise, only this much intellectual activity, only this much going back to work. You can only do these steps of driving. Okay. You're in the wrong place. They must give you a list of things you can and cannot do. The average person, remember, average college age kid, females, 29.4 days to return to play. Average male is 22.4. The worst concussions I have ever seen have been in car accidents. Okay, so a recent one that came to our clinic, 50-year-old man, was a Division II athlete, played multiple sports, did really well. He was driving a full-size SUV, going to his daughter's high school graduation party. A guy ran a stop sign at 70 miles an hour, flipped his full-size SUV three times. We saw him 2 months later. He fractured his tailbone, fractured five ribs, still has visual problems, If the noise is too loud, he goes from zero to freak out and all his pains get worse. His eyes cannot focus. He can't read a line without getting dizzy if he stands up too fast. And so he did all the ER stuff to save his life first. And he has no memory of the accident at all. So he has short-term memory problems. And this is only 3 months. So the accident only happened 3 months ago. So it doesn't have to be a massive hit like Tua, the Dolphins quarterback, got. There are more people in everyday life that suffer head injuries. And remember, your head doesn't have to hit anything, that you have a brain problem. And the problem is, like, there are some NFL players, we examine them, tell them what's wrong after they retire. And they say, "Doc, I don't want to do that because it's going to affect my case against the NFL. And I tell them, "Hold on. You don't want to fix your brain because you're worried about money. In 10 years, you might not know your child's name or their face. What are you talking about?" The same is true for us. It's like, okay, do not waste your brain. Make sure you get yourself taken care of.
Now, this is an incredibly important area and topic that most people don't even realize may be happening to them because of the subtle impacts on a day-to-day world. We started up the program saying smashing your head against the trunk, or something happens, you're hit from behind. But, you know, I wish we had all day to talk about this because we could continue the process and come up with all kinds of things. But we're at the end of the program. Dr. M, thank you for taking the time. You and I will hook up a little bit later. We want to remind our listeners that they can text concussion 833-459-3667. And we continue doing this for one reason and for one reason only. We love you all. Have a great day. Have a great Sunday. See you next week. Bye.